This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I've had to say goodbye to my mother and father after they were diagnosed with cancer. My parents and family were extremely grateful for the attempts of doctors to extend their lives, because no one ever wants to say goodbye to someone they love. Sadly, their joie de vivre, joy of life, was severely impacted as a result of treatments and disease progression. We felt devastated. We watched as their disease rendered them helpless and struggling to maintain any semblance of who they were. We had no choice. We had to wait for their bodies to slowly fail. The cultures of veterinary and human medicine diverge greatly when it comes to the matter of a gentle passing of life. I don't like to have to euthanize a pet, but I am honored that I'm allowed to assist an animal in passing quickly, painlessly, and with dignity. How you deal with this issue for your pet is very individual. My hope with this podcast is for you to know your options and make decisions that are the most appropriate for you, your family, and your pet. My guest is a dear friend and colleague, co-founder and CEO of Lap of Love, along with being a co-host of Pet Care TV, Dr. Danny McVetti. We'll be right back after this short break.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Pick up two tubes of Dogosuds.
Get the third tube free.
Peppermint, tea tree, lavender, Dogosud shampoo.
Made with all-natural coconut, jojoba, aloe. Great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
But no itchy, harsh chemicals.
Lather up, rinse away.
Try Dogosuds. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dynovite.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Danny, you are probably the expert in this very emotional subject, so I so appreciate you being my guest today.
Thank you, Bernadine. It's good to be with you.
Well, oftentimes when people think that a pet's life is coming towards its terminus, they say, okay, my only option is for euthanasia. But there's also hospice, but I think that's a term a lot of people are unfamiliar with. They kind of know a little bit about it from human medicine, but not so much from veterinary medicine. So as we start, what is hospice care and how does it differ from what is being offered in human medicine?
That's such a good question. It's one that I got so many times 10 years ago when I started Lab of Love Veterinary Hospice. And families would say, well, what is it? You know, what are you doing? And let's take the bigger picture. The bigger picture of hospice care is comfort-oriented and not curative. And I actually started using that word when I was doing emergency medicine and somebody would come in, let's say on a Friday, and they knew that their dog had congestive heart failure. They knew their cat had chronic renal failure. But maybe they weren't ready to say goodbye at that moment, or maybe their spouse or, you know, an adult child was coming home later that weekend. And I would say to them, well, let's hospice for the next couple of days. And then on Sunday, we'll discuss, you know, the euthanasia options. And they got it. You know, so I think society in general is kind of getting this concept of hospice care a little bit more than we did, you know, in the past decades. But I volunteered for human hospice when I was in college. So that's kind of where my comfort with it came. And I just felt like such an amazing experience that I could bring to veterinary medicine.
So how does it differ from hospice care in human medicine? Or is it basically the same?
You know, the word hospice is the same. So the word hospice is just something that again, it means, you know, the care of a terminally ill patient. Palliative care is another word that you'll hear a lot, which also that can just be a very broad term, meaning the curative measures or the comfort measures or the medical measures that we're using aren't about taking away that illness, but simply about making that illness not create something uncomfortable for the patient, whether that patient is human or non-human. The difference comes in, as you were mentioning in that beautiful intro, the options that we have in veterinary medicine that may be a little bit different than the options that we have in human medicine. In veterinary medicine, we do have the option of euthanasia, and that's something that is obviously more heavily regulated in certain states and certain countries in human medicine, so that's beyond what we'll talk about here. But in veterinary medicine, we do have the availability of euthanasia as a, quote, treatment option. So that's an option that we can utilize when the pain becomes too much, when we're trying to prevent that pain and suffering, really when we're just trying to mitigate a more negative experience, which is what can happen with the natural dying process, which I use that word natural in quotations because even natural is not something that we always end up doing with our pets. I don't think Mother Nature necessarily intended our cats to be getting to 20 years of age or our dogs to be getting to 15, 16, 17, you know, so really what I tend to say in place of that is an unassisted biological death. So just that kind of more normal process. And that can be really tough for people. So it's beautiful that we have euthanasia as an option when it's appropriate.
You're talking about nature, and so many times my pet parents will be coming in and they say, well, we just want our pet to stay home and to die naturally. And trying to explain that natural death isn't really a very pleasant way to go. Typically, you know, they'll starve to death if you think of that way, because they don't feel like eating in the wild. Nature wouldn't be bringing them a bowl of food. So here we brought them into our homes, and many times we need to assist. It is interesting because people, when we've been present with a pet that's passed, say, oh, this must be one of the hardest things for you to do. And it's not easy. I know it's not easy for anyone that has to provide the service, but it can be such a bonding situation between the pet parent and the veterinarian, because you are giving that ultimate gift of love, letting them pass in such a loving way. I always tell people, boy, I hope when it's my time that it's quick and painless and somebody's loving me, and that's what I remember. And I know they're getting that way now with human medicine. I have a very close client / friend whose mother was diagnosed with advanced breast cancer, and very, very mature woman. There was not much they could do. And through a very difficult process, found a doctor that would come in and allow her to pass at home. So it was euthanasia at home, and it was just a very loving situation for her. So I'm hoping that human medicine gets there more and more.
No, you're exactly right. And it's fascinating. You know, when I sit down with a family in their home and they'll say something like, and this generally happens afterwards, you know, afterwards they'll stand up and they'll have this body language that just screams relief. And I'll say to them, I say, do you feel better? And they say, my gosh, I feel so much better. And then of course they feel guilty for saying that immediately. Right. But my response to that is, he's not in pain anymore, and you don't have to worry about him anymore. And then the next thing is, they feel almost, you know, weird for saying this, but they'll say to me, like, I wish my mom had that. I wish my dad had that. And to see their loved one pass in a peaceful way, it's something that you can't really fathom before it happens. But once it happens, you kind of realize, oh my gosh, this is better than what my mom, dad, grandma, grandpa went through. And why can't it be that good? And just like you said earlier, you know, that the natural, and I use that in quotations, the natural dying process is not what we have available right now. Thankfully, right? It's beautiful that we have all these advances in medicine. But I think the natural lifespan of a cat, a feral cat out in the wild, is about 5 or 6 years of age. And the same with a dog. But Mother Nature has a different way, that if you're sick, if you're slow, if you're just unlucky in the pack, a lion is going to come and get you. And that dying process is not always better than what we have available in the home with the medical advances that we have. So the way I equate it is that euthanasia is almost like an epidural for death. So the birthing process and the dying process, right? They're coming into this world, they're exiting this world, but the birthing process is going to happen whether or not we step in medically or not. but an epidural is there to make the process a little bit less painful. And the same thing with the death. The euthanasia process is there to make the dying process, which is going to happen whether or not we step in or not, a little less painful. And again, you know, it's yes, euthanasia does initiate the dying process, but we're doing it in a very, very mindful way. And I mean, you and I could talk over and over, you know, for hours about this. You know, what we go through as veterinarians, when we're helping people with our own pets. And I think the one thing that as veterinarians that we bring to the conversation with families, obviously we bring a lot, but one of the bigger points that we bring is we understand what happens if we don't say goodbye. Right? We know what happens. There are disease processes that progress so rapidly and so unpredictably and so painfully with these pets that, yes, we all want our pet to close our eyes and go to sleep and not wake back up. I would love that for me too. I would love that for my family, for everything. But that is just not what generally happens for most of the diseases that we deal with. Congestive heart failure. Their lungs, you know, at the very end, the lungs will fill up with fluid, which is why it's called congestive. Heart failure, the heart stops working. The lungs fill up with fluid because the heart can't pump the fluid through the lungs anymore. And they, you know, I apologize to be graphic about it, but they drown in their own fluid. And that is not a better option than the ability for us to give a sedative and then give a medication that literally is anesthesia for death. They go to sleep and they don't wake back up. So when people say, when pet parents say to me, I just want them to go to sleep and not wake back up, I say that's exactly what euthanasia does, is they go to sleep and they don't wake back up. But we get to do it in a very mindful way. We can go to the beach. I live in Florida, so I'm sorry for those of you that don't live in Florida. But, you know, we live in Florida. We can go to the beach and have this process done on the beach at sunset. We can go in your pool. I've euthanized golden retrievers that love to swim in the pool, literally in the pool. You know, I mean, you and I both could just geek out over stories like this forever. And that's possible when we think about it and plan for it in a mindful way. And my goodness, I wish that I could be guaranteed that for my own passing, for my loved ones' passings as well.
And that's such great memories that you can have. I can imagine, you know, this dog in the pool, you in the pool with it, yeah. You know, just, yes, this is where I like to be. This is what makes me happy. And for the family to remember that as their last memory. Mm-hmm. I know you said, Dr. McVetti, that in college you volunteered for human hospice. Is this how you came up with the idea for Lap of Love? Because when you first did and I heard about Lap of Love, I thought, this is either very cutting edge or very crazy. And it was definitely cutting edge. And what a fabulous service. It's now available throughout the United States. And I know I use your service greatly at my practice.
Yeah, no, you're so sweet. Yes, it is what inspired it. I read a book when I was in college called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. I'm sure many of you have heard of it. And in the book, they actually talked, it's very just one off chapter. So at some point that I was reading, it talked about the author and his wife volunteered for human hospice. And at that point, I was, 20 years old. I had not had a significant loss in my life. And I really, I felt for whatever reason, just kind of called to do that. So I took the weekend training class that they require you to take. And then I went and I volunteered. And the first patient that I had Lou Gehrig's disease. And it is fascinating to watch the process of deterioration with that disease. In humans, they retain their mental capacity, but just the neurons disassociate from the skeletal muscle system. And it's really this fascinating thing. And I felt so honored to watch my patient kind of go through this. The first time that I ever saw her really, truly smile in a way that a Lou Gehrig's patient can smile, just in her eyes were lit up, was actually the day that they called me and they said that she's close to the passing. And would you like to come say goodbye? And I had been there probably 15 times or so before and seen her struggle to communicate with me and struggle to feed herself and these things that are just so memorable to me. And, but the day that I came to say goodbye, she was happy. You could just see it in her face. She was genuinely at peace. I didn't really know at the time what that was going to mean, but I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian. And then when I got into vet school, as you know, Dr. Cruz, you know, when you're in veterinary school, you see people that go to a veterinary college for treatment tend to be the ones that are going to do anything and everything. And sometimes that's amazing. And sometimes you want to have a conversation with these families that says, it's okay to let go. we really need to be able to let go, and that's fine. And so I felt comfortable having that conversation, having had it, the hospice experience, and even just saying the word hospice. And again, when I say the word hospice to some families, they relax, because all of a sudden they know that I'm not going to talk them into, you know, hundreds of dollars worth of treatment or hundreds of dollars worth of x-rays and blood work and that kind of thing. And families can get very frustrated with that. Not that it's not important, but just because they feel that it's not really providing a quality of life to their pet. Tests give us answers. And my favorite line in Jurassic Park is, just because we can doesn't mean that we should. So just because we can do all these things doesn't always mean that we should. There's absolutely a place for them. But that the inspiration that I got just from hospice in general, volunteering for them, allowed me to bring the comfort with that conversation into my veterinary medical practice. And then there's one story that will kind of tell you the inspiration behind even the word lap of love. There's this lady that came into the emergency room, and I was probably 2 months out of school at this point, out of veterinary college. And she looked at me and she said, "Can you please leave him on my lap?" She had a little chihuahua wrapped in a gray blanket. I'll never forget it. And she asked me to leave him on her lap. She goes, "I don't want him on the cold, sterile table. Please don't take him away from me into the back to place an IV catheter." And so I looked at her, and, you know, in veterinary school, we're taught to take them into the treatment area, which is the easiest and most efficient way for us to place an IV catheter and then to bring him back. But she didn't want him off her lap. And I was able to provide that for her. I looked up some sedation protocols that allowed me to kind of work around her. And that was the inspiration for the phrase lap of love. And even for the process that we use today of working around the owner and doing the very best we can to not disturb that physical bond even that they have, and especially at the very end.
I totally agree with you, Dani, that all these scenarios that you're mentioning, how you came up with lap of love, just really is a testament of that human-animal bond and not trying to destroy it, because it's those memories that will keep that bond going on forever. We need to take a break right now. Want to come back, because I think the next topic has to be, how does a pet owner assess that quality of life? And when is it time to consider hospice? And when is it time to consider letting them go? So we'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hair everywhere! How do you manage your cat's hair, hairballs, and dander when they're not really fond of bathing? The answer is just a whisker away with catnip bath wipes from Whitegate. It's the only cat wipe on the market that's infused with natural catnip oil. Catnip bath wipes will leave your cat happy, calm, and playful, and you'll both look forward to bath time. Go to WhiteGateInc.com, that's WhiteGateInc.com, and enter the code CATNIP for 15% off site-wide plus free shipping. That's right, 15% off. We're not kidding.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
So, Dr. McVetti, the hardest question is, Doctor, my pet is not in pain. How do I know that what you're telling me is correct? That my pet needs to go into hospice, my pet needs to be euthanized. It's not just physical pain, but it's also, I think, for a family, that mental pain that the pet and they feel. You've come up with a quality of life skill. I'd love to have you talk about it.
Yes, absolutely. And it is, it's, and you as a veterinarian, you know this as well, it's the most important conversation, it's the most important question that we answer about a pet and for a family, which is the quality of life. And there's so many things that go into this, as you know, and we do have a quality of life scale on our website that families are welcome to download and use. And really, there's many things to discuss. And I always start with the disease process that the pet has, because the way that we hospice and the way that we coach a family through euthanasia for a chihuahua with congestive heart failure is very, very different than how we coach a family with a Great Dane that has arthritis. So it's very important that the family talks to their veterinarian and even brings the quality of life scale. And there's, if not ours, there's many others online as well, and brings that to your veterinarian and have a discussion about the disease process. Because there are diseases that will go downhill very, very quickly. Congestive heart failure is one. Brain conditions such as seizuring could be another. Hemangiosarcoma, which is a cancer of the blood or cancer of the bones. There are many conditions that will go downhill very quickly that you're not going to have time for. So for those families that may want to have every last moment they could possibly have with their pet, I really try to coach them a little bit more strongly into potentially making this decision sooner than you want, if you value having a really beautiful, peaceful experience and ceremony around that euthanasia process. The Great Dane with arthritis, or maybe a German Shepherd with degenerative myelopathy, which is like ALS in dogs, that coaching process is very different. We can wait much longer. We can take it day by day. And I tell those families that they have the cursing and the blessing of time. So it's a bit of a curse because you wake up every day and think, is it today? Is it today? Is it today? And you have, it's constantly on your mind. But it is also a blessing because you have time to think about it and to plan it. So even if your pet isn't suffering at that moment, because of course, families will say, well, they're not suffering yet. And my response is always, do you want them to be?
True.
Because I promise you, I know you've been through this, Dr. Cruz. I lost my own pet a few months ago. And she was in the emergency room and she passed away without me. And she went downhill quickly than I could have ever imagined. But you don't want to have to get that far. That's why I started this business in the first place, is so that you don't have to wait until the middle of the night rushing to the ER at 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's not a peaceful experience. So that is the number one thing, is talking to your veterinarian about the actual disease process and what their feedback is on how quickly that disease process is going to occur. But other than that, families really need to not only think about the process of death for their pet, but also really how they're handling it. Sometimes there's one spouse that's doing all the nursing care and the other one travels and he or she doesn't want to make the decision, but the one that's doing all the nursing care says it's time. And they're just not agreeing with each other. That's when you, again, talk to the veterinarian and get their feedback and get somebody to kind of mend those perspectives, because the family's perspective and the family's quality of life is really something that needs to be taken into account as well. Because there might be nursing care that we can do for months and months and months, but that doesn't always mean that it's going to be the right option for the family, particularly if it doesn't mean that we're really getting a great deal of improvement from the pet. So,
and oftentimes they feel so guilty when they say, I have many, many senior clients and they have larger pets. And it's like, I'm concerned about your pet, but I'm also very concerned about you, because you're not getting sleep. You can't lift this pet up. You can't get down on the floor and clean up the mess. And I know that you want to do it, but you can't do it. And I'm concerned about your health, because now watching you and other family members, the angst that's happening, the arguments that are happening, I'm concerned about the whole family.
You're exactly right. And the isolation also. I'll walk into homes and there'll be a mattress on the ground floor and they haven't been sleeping in their room because they're sleeping with the dog who can't get up the stairs. Or the kids, maybe adult children are getting upset at the parents because they won't leave the home because they have to care for the pet. And now the pet parents are missing weddings and funerals and anniversaries. And you're right, like it causes a lot of angst and just disagreements within families when we need to keep in mind the whole picture. And the veterinary oath that you and I took, it does not say we're going to maintain life at all costs. It says the relief and prevention of pain and suffering. And euthanasia isn't just always about stopping suffering that's occurring at that moment, but in reality, it's about preventing it from occurring at all. And that suffering, just as you said, it's not just the pet. The families really do need to have permission to think about their quality of life as well.
I think what's so wonderful about being a veterinarian, because we all have pets and we've all watched them because of their condensed lifespans die in our care. And sometimes, as you said, I'm so sorry to hear about your pet that passed so recently, but we've been there, we've seen it. And being a veterinarian, there's so many times where I say, okay, just one more drug, one more test, one more this, one more that. I can do it. I can make it, have a better quality of life a little bit longer. And then I've now had to really train myself back away from the pet. Bernadine, you're not doing this for the pet any longer. You're doing this for you. So I can tell my pet parents, I'd rather do it maybe a week too soon versus a week too late.
You're exactly right. And that's a phrase that we use with families all the time. You're exactly right. I think it came from some quote that we read somewhere that was like, it's better to help a friend a day too early than a second too late.
Right.
And whatever time frame, you want to put on that, but you are right on. And I got to tell you that, yes, there will always be some type of guilt associated with losing a pet. Look, I'm a veterinarian and I didn't even have to euthanize my pet. And I still feel guilty that I didn't give her the right experience. And if I had euthanized her, I would have felt guilty about that. If I had someone else euthanize her, I would have felt guilty that I didn't do it. There's always some type of guilt associated with the grieving process that we have. And I think that's really important for families to really comprehend, because at this point, it's really about the mitigation of that guilt and through the mitigation of pain and suffering. So the families that I've seen, and I know you've seen them also, the families that I've seen that wait too long, that is a very different guilt than my pet's declining and we need to do this now. And I have never, not one time in my career, had somebody say, I did it too soon. And maybe I take a little bit of pride in that I think it's important for us as veterinarians to help families feel comfortable about what we're doing and really completely holistically understand the why behind what we're doing. But the guilt of waiting too long is very, very, very different. And in my experience, much heavier than, doing it a little bit sooner.
You mentioned children guilt. And I think one of the situations I ran into recently was a mother who had made the decision it was time to let this little cute fluffy dog who had lost like 39% of its body weight in 5 months, was weak, couldn't stand, had projectile vomiting, diarrhea. Mom knew it was the right thing to do. Making that decision. She had to call her daughter. Daughter came in. We spent 3 hours trying to discuss this. And the daughter was giving her mom so much guilt because, it's not time. There's more things that we can do. This pet's okay. How do you handle situations like that? Because it was her love that was blinding her to what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And those are very, very difficult conversations that veterinary school did not prepare us for, right? They didn't give us a class on that in vet school. And I think it's just like anybody in a medical profession, or even, MDs, DOs, like we're all going to get put in situations that we just are very heavy for us. Personally, I take a lot of pride in mitigating those conversations and at least facilitating them between family members. And at the end of the day, you have to lean on that person that is there doing the nursing care and seeing that pet every day, and then help the other person understand what their family member is going through. And then beyond that, help them understand what the other options for that pet is. So if we don't euthanize, your pet is going to get worse. If we don't euthanize, at some point he's going to fall down and hurt himself so badly that he's going to be screaming in pain. And this might happen at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're going to rush him to the ER. And some of these things can get quite shocking for people to hear, but they really need to hear that, because the other person that's been doing all the nursing care has been going over these things in their mind again and again and again. And there have been multiple times when I have asked one of the individuals to leave the room so that I can talk with somebody else. And there are obviously things that happen that we don't always know as veterinarians, family dynamics, interpersonal dynamics. But as a veterinarian, our goal is to simply stand up for the pet's best interest and support the family's desire to treat them in a particular way. So I'll never do something, and I tell everybody this, I would never do something that I didn't feel was the absolute best thing to do, the very best thing to do. So it has nothing to do with you, has nothing to do with your daughter, has nothing to do with your spouse at all. It has everything to do with what the pet's best interest is. And that's the whole reason why all of us are here in the first place. So kind of getting them all on the same page. But yeah, it is a very difficult conversation that has to be handled very diplomatically, because you want, at the end of the day, for the whole family to go back together in theory without their pet, and everybody feel that they did the best that they could. Yeah.
You're speaking of difficult conversations, Danny, and I know you have children, and trying to explain, because they've grown up with this pet many times and this is their buddy and this is their best friend. And now we're saying, your best friend, we can't fix it. and your best friend needs to leave your side, how do you break that conversation? How do you start that conversation with a child?
Oh, gosh, I know it is. It's just heartbreaking sometimes. Oh, my goodness, that can be some of the more sad ones to do. The topic of children and euthanasia is obviously a very delicate one, but it's important to kind of break up the age ranges. So when families ask me my opinion, obviously I'll start with your mom, your dad, you know best. But children 5 and under, I do recommend that they're not present at the euthanasia unless the family thinks they can handle it, simply because they tend to be more attached to mom and dad's emotions than they are their own emotions. So if they see mom and dad crying, then they cry. And then sometimes that can upset mom and dad. So with the younger children, for them not to be there, I think is very appropriate. And that also allows mom and dad to have a safe place to grieve without worrying about the effect that it's going to have on their younger children. 5 and above, I say, ask them. Ask them if they want to be there. The times that I have been there with children, I cannot tell you the ethereal comments that they have. Children handle this way better than we think that they would. You know, they get life and death. They say things like, when do we get another dog? Right. And then like everybody laughs and giggles and we're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they just said that. But to a child, there are some children that really do get this process. Now there are some children that obviously have a very difficult time with it as well. And around that age of like 9 or 10 up through the teenage years, and quite frankly, even into the early mid 30s sometimes, those tend to be the hardest ages for us as veterinarians to coach through the dying process, because you have a very altruistic view of society still. And teenagers will say to me, well, we need to fight, we need to cure this, and it's still possible. And you know, you see videos and movies where there's miracle cures and that kind of thing. And we all know that, yes, that happens, but there are very important circumstances where that's just not going to happen. And so I spend a great deal of time talking with teenagers when it's appropriate, when the parent allows me, to really give them very, very blunt answers. And I get them involved in the conversation too. What are your fears? And their fears are always surrounding that we gave up, that we didn't do something right. And in reality, this is the first time that they're experiencing a loss. And even adults into their 20s, sometimes this is the pet that they got when they were 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And it's the first time they've ever actually cared for a soul greatly outside of their own beingness. And so it's a really, really difficult loss for them. But it's also an extremely important lesson. So I think with children, it's imperative that we are clear, that we use words like, they died, honey, and they're not going to come back. And try to relate it to other family members that have died, maybe grandma and grandpa, something like that, where they at least know of the passing, even if they can't remember the experience of it. And really just make sure that we use those clear words, not something like, they're going to go to sleep. Well, you mean like go to sleep? Because then they think that when they go to sleep, they might die. No, not when you go to sleep. Or I'll say something like, they're very sick, not a little bit sick, like when you get sick and you have a cold, not like that. This is a lot sick. Greater sick than you and I can even understand right now, honey. Like very, very bad sick. This is how I talk to them, you know, the younger kids. And just try to use words like they're died. And I don't go into the heaven or anything like that. That's for a parent to fill in. But it is so important to be clear with these younger kids because they deserve that. A psychologist once told me, if you want to raise an angry child, keep them ill-informed.
Excellent.
Right? Isn't that great?
Yeah. Speaking of informing the other pets that are at home. Mm-hmm. So some people want to have their other family pets present when the pet euthanizes. Some don't. I think it's a very good idea. Believe that most pet parents will think that, oh, the one pet that's now remaining alive will see the other one lay down next to it, kind of the Disney thing, snuggle up, cry, moan. And sometimes it's just a matter of they walk over going, and then walk away.
Right.
Do you think they should be present or not?
You know, that the short answer to that question is yes. As long as they are not interrupting or interfering with us actually treating the patient that we're there to see, I prefer that other pets be in the room. Now, let's say, you know, because I've been in rooms where maybe there's a 2-year-old Labrador and we're saying goodbye to the 15-year-old Golden Retriever, right? The 2-year-old Labrador isn't always going to completely understand, and they may be interfering with mom or dad's space, and they may not be able to fully be present with their older pet. So in that case, I do suggest that we put them in the back room. Going into people's homes, a lot of the pets are more interested in me as a stranger than they are being present with the process that we're there for. So again, in those cases, I'll suggest that they go in a back room. But after the process of euthanasia, then I'll step out and give the family some time and then let the other pets come in. But animals get this better than we do. They do not have a problem with the circle of life. We're the ones that question, where are we going? What's going to happen? What now? What about my grief? I'm guilty for doing this, you know, yada, yada. Animals just don't have that. So in a way, I think that they serve as a wonderful example for us on really how to get through the loss of a pet. I was with this one gentleman one time and we euthanized his older dog. And then the younger one came up to her, sniffed her, and then walked over her and started eating. And this gentleman was, he was so mad at his dog. He was just bona fide mad. He's like, how could she eat at a time like this? I can't believe this. And I was like, no. She gets this. She's okay with it. We're the ones that have a problem with it. You know, just think about the wild. Like they're okay with this. We question things. There's this other kitty. I'll never forget this. This one cat, we said goodbye to one of her cats. And the other cat came out of nowhere. And I hadn't seen this kitty before, you know, in the home. She's just hiding. She came up and saw her deceased sibling there on the table. And she hissed at her sibling. Just, you know, hissed at him and then kind of smacked him on the face. And I was looking at the owner because I was mortified. I thought, oh my gosh, this poor thing, you know. And the owner's like, it's okay. They never liked each other anyway. He just get the last word. And I was, I'll never forget that, you know. And she just gave such a beautiful answer. But, you know, to that point, like animals understand it, you know. And even this little kitty wanted to get just the last word in and then ran away again. And I love just watching how they are. Now, I will give one bit of advice for families that are in a clinic setting, because sometimes that just happens and there's no right or wrong when it comes to euthanasia. It's better in the home. It's not better in the home, whatever. Everybody's got their own space that they're comfortable in. If you are concerned about your pets at home and maybe had to say goodbye to your one pet in the clinic, emergency or non-emergency, take the collar and you can actually take that collar of the deceased pet or shave a little bit of the hair and take it home and just set it out, set it on the bed, set it next to the food bowl or something, and let that other pet kind of sniff it at their leisure, because there are chemical things that are beyond our understanding that I do believe pets pick up on. So that might just limit the looking around or, you know, trying to walk around, trying to find their other housemate, which I have heard a lot about also. So there's different ways to help our pets through that process.
Dr. McVetti, we could go on and on because you have such wonderful insights into this very difficult subject. And again, I do so appreciate you being with us today. I know we have your Lap of Love link on our website. So Lap of Love has fabulous information of answering some of these extremely difficult questions. So Dr. McVetti, thank you again.
You're so welcome, Dr. Cruz. Thank you.
So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz from The Pet Doctor. If you have any questions that you want answered, please drop me a line. You can find the email address on our website. I'll gladly answer it for you and or have a program that talks about that particular subject. So please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.